G'day, it's just about half past one on the afternoon of the 21st of August 2015, after the hearing of recusal this morning, and this is my second editorial for the day. In the first editorial, which was delivered immediately after the close of oral submissions made by the ACTU, CFMEU and AWU advocates, I said that the position looked favourable to the unions in their submissions on the basis that Mr. Aegis's submission about having been furnished with what he called a, he said what a reasonable man would be able to infer was a doctored version of email correspondence. I said what I said on the basis that Mr. Aegis was speaking factually, completely, let's throw in honestly, and that he was not mistaken in his view. Now, since then, counsel assisting the submission, Jeremy Stolger, has made a very forceful submission that Mr. Aegis is in fact mistaken in his view, and the released evidence would tend to support Mr. Stolger's position. I mean, it doesn't tend to support, it does support Mr. Stolger's position. It would appear that the emails as released in the first instance did include all the attachments, etc., which of course changes very much the reasonable man's view of this matter, if it could be held that there might have been an error or a purposeful omission of the invitations. Well, that paints one picture. If in fact the invitations and the attachment note were sent out in the first instance, that's an entirely different picture. And I would alter my view accordingly to accommodate those changing apparent facts. It seems on the face of it, let's just cut to the chase, Mr. Aegis is wrong in his submission. You'd hate to think that it was maliciously motivated and that he said it to get a headline or to have the opportunity to get a headline. You'd hate to think that, although Slater and Gordon are instructing him, so nothing is beyond impossible. There's one last point I want to make, and I think it's an important point, and I probably should have made it first. It's this. Put yourself in the position of a very, very busy commissioner in these proceedings. You receive this invitation. You say to your PA in answer, look, Patricia, if that's her name, Patricia, if there's any chance this can be construed as a Liberal Party fundraiser, I won't do it. And you go into the hearing. Now, that's the last you say. She could interpret that as giving her the remit to refuse the invitation off her own bat. I can picture this happening, having had PAs in the past. She may have interpreted it as it appears she did, as being an instruction to write back to the people who've issued the invitation and to tell them that if there's any chance it could be construed as a Liberal Party fundraiser, he can't do it. I can see how that confusion could easily have arisen. I've been in similar circumstances myself. You say to your PA, look, if there's any chance it's a fundraiser, I can't do it. You walk away and you expect her to act on her own initiative and to knock back the invitation. That's as much attention as you give it. She's written back, whether on his instructions or not, and he's a very chivalrous gentleman. He's not going to drop her in. She's written back and has said in the email back to the organisers, if there's any chance it could be construed as a fundraiser, etc. I tell you what this undoubtedly does illustrate is how from the tiniest of little things, such when you get lawyers involved, such a huge amount of bloody noise, smoke, and heat has been created.